My name is Kiran Gupta, and I am a co-owner at New Internationalist magazine. I have the pleasure of presenting the magazine's long read articles in a new audio format. I first came across the New Internationalist almost 20 years ago when a cover story about ethical tourism grabbed my attention and changed the course of my studies. I'm proud to be a co-owner of New Internationalist alongside thousands of others around the world who believe in the value of independent media. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It really helps other people to find us and hear our stories. Now, on to the long read.
Revolutionary aid. Once at the forefront of the 2018 revolution, Sudan's social movements are now providing vital humanitarian aid throughout a devastating civil war. How have they kept their pro-democracy politics alive and adapted to a changing landscape? Ian Husham reports. At Adre Refugee Camp in Chad, volunteers from the Saving Al Janina initiative hand out a simple meal of beans to children far too young to understand the war that they have fled in their home country of Sudan. It's a modest yet nourishing refreshment much needed in a camp housing 150,000 people. Most of the camp's residents are from Al Janina, the capital of West Darfur State, which was brutally attacked by the Rapid Support Forces, RSF, and allied militias in 2023. Families were torn apart, homes burned to the ground, and entire communities displaced. Saving Al Janina began as a response to this violence to provide immediate relief to a city engulfed in horror. Since then, this local project has grown into a nationwide and cross-border mission, extending its reach to vulnerable communities in the capital Khartoum, the states Jazeera and Sennar, as well as other refugee camps in Chad. Fueled by the generosity of the Sudanese diaspora, it continues to serve those most in need. Saving Al Janina grew out of a rich tradition of youth-led, grassroots aid, which has, since the war began in 2023, been providing essential relief by and for Sudanese people. The conflict between the army and the RSF, a powerful paramilitary group, has killed over 150,000 people, and Sudan is now experiencing what has been described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Between mid-April 2023 and December 2024, about 12 million people fled their homes, and nearly two-thirds of the population, around 30.4 million people, are in need of urgent aid. Despite living under a dictatorship and a devastating ongoing civil war, the Sudanese people have continued to organize. Resistance committees, which emerged from the pro-democracy protests of 2013, have established emergency response rooms, ERRs, in order to support vulnerable people who are facing famine. Grassroots social movements like the ERRs have essentially become the state in Sudan, says political analyst Dalia Abdelmunim. Backbone of the revolution. Formerly known as neighborhood committees, resistance committees evolved into the backbone of the citizen-led revolution ignited in the northeast of Atbara on 19 December 2018. Triggered by soaring bread prices and economic hardship, the resistance movement developed into calls for the removal of then-President Omar al-Bashir from his nearly 30-year rule. One by one, states began slipping from the regime's grip as protests spread and security forces struggled to maintain control. It became a nationwide uprising. The revolution's decentralized nature became one of its most striking features, with people from smaller towns and rural areas playing a pivotal role in sustaining the momentum. Resistance committees rapidly organized themselves into highly coordinated grassroots networks. They became the driving force behind the protests, facilitating everything from logistics and mobilization to communication and security against regime informants. Meticulous planning and an ability to adapt to changing circumstances allowed the movement to persist despite the regime's brutal crackdowns. At the same time, professional bodies, particularly the Sudanese Professional Association, SPA, played a critical role in strategic planning. The SPA, comprised of doctors, teachers, engineers, and other professionals, provided a unified voice for the movement, issuing statements of its demands. By leveraging social media and other communications tools, the SVA amplified the revolution's message, ensuring that the call for freedom, peace, and justice reached every corner of the country. This collaboration between resistance committees and professional associations created a powerful synergy, uniting diverse groups under a shared vision of a democratic Sudan. One pivotal moment came on 6 April 2019, when tens of thousands of Sudanese people gathered at the army headquarters in Khartoum. Organized by the SPA and grassroots resistance committees, the sit-in boldly challenged the al-Bashir regime at the heart of its military power. It became a hub of resistance, uniting students, professionals, women, and rural communities. Despite the crackdowns, they stood firm, placing pressure on the military and forcing the removal of al-Bashir from power on 11 April 2019. But in the early hours of 3 June, the revolution witnessed its darkest moment as the RSF, along with other security forces, launched a brutal assault using tear gas, live bullets, and whips on the peaceful protesters. Hundreds were injured or killed. Chillingly, many bodies were dumped into the Nile River to obscure the magnitude of the atrocity. Yet the people's resolve for justice was not crushed. The SPA immediately announced a program of mass civil disobedience. And on 30th June, millions of Sudanese took the streets, calling for accountability and a civilian-led government across the country. The day marked one of the largest demonstrations of the revolution. This historic mobilization forced the Traditional Military Council, TMC, to sign a power-sharing agreement in August 2019 and form a civilian-led government. A history of resistance. Sudan's social movements were fortified through resistance against the al-Bashir regime, which came to power in 1989 and swiftly consolidated itself by targeting opposition leaders, activists, and social movements. Security forces established infamous torture facilities, known as ghost houses, where dissidents were subjected to brutal torture, enforced disappearances, and extrajudicial killings. Independent institutions and organized resistance were key targets of the suppression. The professional associations, long-standing pillars of Sudan's civil society, were dissolved. Many of the workers in these sectors were detained, while thousands fled the country. Those who remained were replaced in their roles by loyalists aligned with the new regime's Islamist agenda, regardless of their qualifications. When al-Bashir came to power, Sudan's economy was already suffering, deepened by a debt crisis. The regime's crackdowns on workers in national economic institutions also ensured the implementation of IMF and World Bank demands. Rooted in neoliberalism, these policies prioritized austerity, privatization, and subsidy cuts. Workers' leaders who opposed the implementation of such policies or were critical of the regime were arrested, with most subjected to torture and dismissal from their jobs. The consequences of these structural adjustments have been devastating, says economic expert Wael Fahmy, explaining that the policies disproportionately burdened the working class, benefiting a small elite, while Sudan remained trapped in a cycle of debt. Public services collapsed, essential goods became unaffordable, and Fahmy says that poverty rates surged to as high as 90% by some estimates. As citizens mobilized against austerity, the regime repressed protests and silenced dissent under the guise of maintaining stability for international leaders. Fahmy argues that these externally imposed policies not only crippled Sudan's economy, but also undermined efforts for justice and reform. Divide and rule. The regime viewed any form of organized civil or professional activism as a threat to its authority. By manipulating grievances and mobilizing ideological narratives, the regime deepened existing fault lines within the country, from division between Arab and non-Arab communities in Darfur to class-based disparities that marginalized impoverished regions, like South Kordofan and Blue Nile. The fragmentation and mistrust fueled during this time continues to shape Sudan's trajectory. The regime turned its attention to areas of long-running strife, such as the conflicts in the long-neglected and exploited region of southern Sudan. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, which was the main governmental power of the then semi-autonomous region, demanded that the regime address deep inequalities in political representation and economic distribution. Rather than engaging in meaningful dialogue or attempting to address these grievances, the regime escalated the conflict with uncompromising force. It framed the fighting as a jihad, holy war, and painted the SPLM and the largely Christian and traditional animist population of South Sudan as existential threats to Sudan's Islamic and Arab identity. This rhetoric mobilized support among Islamist loyalists while deepening the division between the North and South. Civilians bore the brunt of this destabilization, with villages razed, populations displaced, and widespread atrocities committed by the regime's security forces and their Islamic allied militias. The seeds were sown for lasting resentment, contributing to the eventual independence of South Sudan following a referendum in 2011. Instead of building a sustainable path toward national unity, the regime then shifted its focus to another area of unrest, Darfur in western Sudan. Armed groups such as the Sudan Liberation Army, SLA, and the Justice and Equality Movement, JEM, had emerged in the early 2000s demanding fair representation, resource redistribution, and an end to the neglect of Darfur. The regime responded with brutal military campaigns. Despite Darfur's population being largely Muslim, the regime once again framed its operations through an Islamist lens, portraying the conflict as a defensive Islam against so-called rebels and enemies of the state. It exploited tribal and ethnic divisions between Sudanese African tribes against Sudanese Arab tribes, arming and supporting Arab militias, most notably the Janjaweed, known today as the RSF. Scorched earth campaigns were carried out against armed groups, strongholds, and civilian populations perceived as sympathetic to the rebellion. Entire villages were destroyed, countless civilians were killed, thousands experienced sexual violence, and millions were displaced in what would later be described by the international community as genocide. Each war not only devastated the affected regions, but also deepened Sudan's internal divisions, leaving a legacy of trauma, mistrust, and fragmentation that persists to this day. The Arab Spring of 2011, however, reignited hope among the Sudanese people. In January that year, anti-regime protesters took to the streets, facing a brutal crackdown that lasted days. In 2012, the Sudanese Communist Party, SCP, proposed a game-changing strategy, calling on their members to form neighborhood committees composed of communists and other anti-regime forces, aiming to build grassroots resistance. Change with the times. It's these neighborhood committees which are providing much needed assistance to their fellow citizens today, shifting the way they work to adapt to the ever-changing landscape and needs of the country. It's in their DNA to shift and to adapt their priorities and activities according to the context, says researcher and political analyst Hamid Khalafala, reflecting on how the committees have changed over time. Back in 2019, the civilian-led government that emerged after the revolution sought to depoliticize the resistance committees, which had played a vital role in driving the uprising. Months after assuming power, the government announced plans to transform them into committees of change and services, tasked to oversee the distribution of bread, fuel, and cooking gas. The move was met with widespread outrage among the committees themselves, who saw it as an effort to dissolve their revolutionary character and undermine their political demands. They refused to disband their grassroots groups and instead adapted by creating parallel structures to handle service provision while maintaining their revolutionary identity. This ability to rise to changing circumstances was again demonstrated during the COVID-19 pandemic. Faced with severe shortages of essential goods, people established ERRs to organize community-led service provision. Since the eruption of war in 2023, the ERRs have become the sole effective lifeline for millions trapped in the devastating conflict. Volunteers have dedicated themselves tirelessly to organizing donation drives and supporting hospitals, medical centers, and refugee camps, filling the void left by international aid agencies unable to operate effectively in the war-torn country. These movements have also taken on responsibilities that traditional state institutions have failed to fulfill, such as providing humanitarian aid and healthcare. State infrastructure continues to collapse. However, Abdelmonim emphasizes that this cannot continue without support, insisting that these grassroots organizations urgently need resources, protection, and proper recognition for their invaluable contributions to Sudanese society. Risky business. Efforts to secure international support for the ERRs remain fraught with challenges. Critics have accused the international community of treating the ERRs like traditional NGOs, imposing funding requirements that fail to account for their grassroots nature and the urgency of their operations. They are relying on the Sudanese diaspora for their core source of funding, says Khulod Kher, the director of the think tank Confluent Advisory. And because the diaspora understands better than any donor what these people are up against, they're able to provide funding very quickly and also for that funding to be as flexible as possible. The ERRs realized very early on that we cannot wait for anyone else to save us. We have to save ourselves, Khalafala explains. Adding to their challenges, the ERRs are frequently targeted by both warring parties, risking the safety of volunteers and threatening vital operations. Sadia Ali, founder of Saving Al Janina, says that people working in the community kitchens are exposed to the risk of airstrikes or raids, as happened in Wad al Nura village in Gazira State and Sennar State, where we previously worked. Ali also highlights the health risks associated with the work, such as exposure to infectious diseases. The absence of protective equipment, vaccines, or basic hygiene facilities puts aid workers in danger. Additionally, the physical and emotional toll of working in conflict zones and witnessing extreme suffering adds to the long-term health challenges they endure. Despite these hurdles, the ERRs remain crucial to Sudan's survival efforts. Abdelmonim emphasizes the need for continuing support, whether through donations, amplifying their work, or advocating for their recognition as indispensable aid workers. They deserve the same acknowledgement and protection as their international counterparts, she says. Despite decades of dictatorship, economic hardship, and relentless human rights crackdowns, Sudan's social movement has never wavered in its commitment to the Sudanese people. Rooted in resilience and unity, it has consistently fought against oppressive regimes and their policies, demanding justice, freedom, and equality. From the early days of independence in 1956 to more recent uprisings, the movement has been a beacon of hope for millions, defying the odds in the face of overwhelming adversity. In times of crisis, organizers have stepped in to provide relief, build solidarity, and amplify the voices of the marginalized. Hope for systemic change has not only been kept alive, but also inspired younger generations to continue the struggle by proving that the collective will of a determined people can endure and ultimately triumph.